Today on the Cooligans, we are joined by the one and only MLS analyst himself, Matt Doyle of MLSsoccer.com, to break down decision day, playoffs coming up, and a lot of the stories in Major League Soccer. We also talked to Julie Foudy, the 99er, about her upcoming, or not upcoming, her current new podcast project with Abby Wambach. And we talk a little bit of European soccer with the one and only Matt Doyle. How did you like that?
I had to hold my nose a little bit, but we did make a plan for Christian to become a millionaire.
Yay!
Sorry, billionaire.
Get it right. All this and
I'm
more.
Fired.
Today on the Cooligans. Matt Doyle, I was the MC yesterday of the cost of living classic. Mm-hmm. See, you're not locked into soccer the way I am because you don't even know about the cost of living classic. So the cost of living classic is a soccer tournament put on by NYC Footy and the Zoran for NYC campaign. And it was held at Maimonides Park where Brooklyn FC plays in Coney Island. And I got to MC the inaugural cost of living classic, which hopefully I think if Zoran wins the mayoral campaign, this becomes a regular thing. So this was a teams that represented all the different boroughs of New York City.
Queens represent.
Queens was well represented. Mm-hmm. I think the winners were ended up being Bronx and Brooklyn. So, you know, but shout out to Queens. They did their thing. Right. They got to the final.
Doesn't sound right to me, but okay.
But it was truly one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to be a part of. So Zoran Mamdani shows up and I mean, this guy's a superstar. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing on top of all that is my man is locked in to soccer. Obsessed. Ball knowledge through the roof. Mm-hmm. I don't know many politicians that know as much about soccer as this dude. So I hope it all works out. I mean, early voting starts October 25th. Election day is November 4th. Go vote. If you're in New York, I mean, we have a lot of listeners not in New York, but tell your New York friends to do the right thing. But that's one of the more exciting things of how much he knows. He's an Arsenal fan. I know that.
I was going to say, like, I don't have a lot of reservations about Zoran. The fact that he's been colonized by the English Premier League,
by North London, yeah, it's hard to see. I would imagine, you know, during all the debates and stuff, they're always like, you know,
Cuomo strikes me as a Juventus fan.
Okay, I would say Lazio,
but not Livorno. Definitely not Livorno. We know that,
but. You know, when he was being asked about, like, you know, are you a Yankees or Mets fan? He's like, oh, well, I kind of like both of them. And it's like, you can't do that.
No.
But that's embarrassing. I mean, as all New Yorkers know, just pick a side. The other side's going to be mad at you a little bit, but just live with that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't waffle along. You can't flip-flop. But they don't do the debates and they're like, are you NYCFC or Red Bull?
Right.
You know, they don't, why? Come on, we got to get to that point in the culture.
I saw that happen. I heard that happen. I was thinking to myself, because the other question that really stood out to me when they were asked is like, would you rather see it like a Knicks game 7 or Yankees or Mets or whatever? And Zoran gave the right answer. The Knicks, they're the one team that kind of unifies the city.
I agree.
No disrespect to Nets fans. I mean,
you're new here.
Sorry. And I was thinking like, man, at what point does NYCFC or Red Bull get to that level? And it just... It, like maybe with the stadium opening up, you know, you start taking a step in that direction in 2027. But it was like a good moment. But it was also like, man, we're going to try to be growing this thing until we're old and gray and dead, aren't we?
Right. it was cool to be there. And I got to meet him, get photos and talk to him a little bit. I invited him on the pod. So if all listeners. At Zoran K. Mamdani on all socials. I'm not like, why are you why haven't you been on the Cooligans podcast? Yeah, you know what?
Why do you think he hasn't been on yet?
I mean,
is he afraid of these hard hitting interviews that you guys are famous for?
You know, these gotcha questions. You know, we're gonna make a couple jokes about Arsenal constantly finishing in second. Are you worried about that? Blah blah blah. Have a little chuckle and then move on, right? Right. And then we're friends with the next mayor of New York City, right? That's the plan. But you know, hit him up. In the comments, yo, hop on the Cooligans podcast. Why haven't you yet? You need the Cooligans bump. Everybody, no mayor has become mayor without the Cooligans bump. Look at.
Don't fact check that. Don't fact check that.
Don't waste it. We don't do fact checking here. That's not what this show is about. But no, really, really cool. So I just wanted to say thank you to Zoran for being so welcoming. His whole campaign staff, all the volunteers, everybody at NYC Footy, all super, super cool. It's an event run on short notice. And they put it together very quickly. The one thing I will say, this is probably why it'll be very hard for me to ever get in politics. And this is going to be relevant to you in particular, because I was emceeing. So I'm like the one, everybody hears me in the stadium. Mm-hmm. So they're like, let me go talk to that guy. And they come up to me and they're like, hey, can you pass a message along to Zoran? Or mm-hmm. Can I get this from him? I'm just like, oh my goodness. Like all these New Yorkers are asking me for all this stuff. Like I'm not used to. Even New Yorkers not used to talking to me.
You got a little bit of power now, though, right? You're the new Robert Moses. You're the one who's going to get the highways bill and going to destroy parks.
We're going to
wipe out entire neighborhoods.
Lady,
man.
I'm destroying your house to build to build a new tunnel. But the one thing, this very sweet lady, two, three women, I think they were from Queens, and they had come up to me and they said, like, hey, we need to talk to Zoran. She said, both of them, they said, we rescue cats.
Those are my people.
Yeah, right.
Those are my people. Yeah.
So we have like they need like a cat sanctuary or some sort of clinic or something because they have all these cats. And, can you let Zoran know that we need this? I'm like, okay. I'm like, I'm making a couple, you know, yuck yucks into this microphone, but I'll try to relay this information. And that it was so genuine and so sweet. And it's I can see what politicians go through of like, you really can't make everybody happy. And not to say that she does not need this cat sanctuary and it's not important. You are a cat guy.
So, I got a cat last year from a cat sanctuary in Queens.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So
adopt, don't shop.
So I was just like, man, I can see the level of like, oh, most of your job is disappointing a lot of people, especially those one-on-one, like, hey, I need this. This is what we need. And this is how we could be supported. And it's like, oh boy, I gotta run this through the city. It's going to be hard, right?
Yeah.
And so even as I first heard it, I'm just like, man, this can't be an easy job.
But that's why Zoran needs to cultivate community leaders, pillars of the city like yourself,
sure,
in order to collect that soft power to then ram it through the cat sanctuary through the city council.
Got it. Well, I mean,
he understands.
I'm part of the cat sanctuary lobby.
It happens just like that, man. Politics moves fast in New York.
So they had given me for hosting. They gave me this custom kit, Zoran kit from the Cost of Living Classic, and it was dope. So shout out to everybody on the team. That was a cool thing. And yeah, next 2.5 weeks are going to be interesting. So we'll see how it goes. Go vote if you haven't yet. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco. I am honored to be joined by my guest co-host today. The one and only, the legend, I call him the MLS encyclopedia, bro. American soccer knowledge through the roof. The one and only Matt Doyle, or Matthew Doyle, whatever he prefers, the MLS analyst himself.
Whatever.
I don't know. I don't give you a full government. I don't know what you prefer, but Matt Doyle, what's up, man? How you doing?
Are you truly honored to have me sitting here?
I am, bro. I mean, you know, when we started this podcast, you were one of these people that I'm like, you know, he's too smart to think I'm interesting. You know what I mean? There's just this assumption that you're not as down to earth as you might be. Because you know what? I'll be straight up. You are. I think because I know you, I know how kind and warm of a person you are. But your timeline, your Twitter, and your Blue Sky and all these things, they're I can see why people might be a little bit intimidated, bro. It's like, oh, I don't want to go out of war with words with this man, because you are a man of morals and you have principle.
At least on Blue Sky,
yeah.
Maybe not in real life, but, you know.
And principle and whiskey, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you have things that you are.
That's like one of the best compliments I've ever got in my entire life.
You are steadfast, and so I can see how some people might be like, oh no, I it might be a little bit more intimidating than when they meet you. That's why I think, you know. RIP Extra Time and all these mm-hmm. other things. Like, we need to see Matt Doyle on camera to see the beautiful smile, see how warm he is.
I never used to, when Extra Time used to do the road shows, right? They went to Seattle, they went to Minnesota, just a couple. I never went. And every time the guys would come back, they're like, everybody was really disappointed you weren't there. They wanted to get into like a war of words with Matt Doyle. And I was like, I'm kind of glad I wasn't there for that, actually.
Yeah.
Because it's different. It's different when you're firing away from your couch on social media versus like you see people in real life, they get heated. People get, it's like, I'm making jokes, man.
Yeah.
I'm making jokes.
It's not even heated. I would say most of the, I'm sure you would normally, and I've experienced this with a lot of people, a lot of American soccer podcasters that for a long time didn't do any video. They just did audio. So, and Total Soccer Show is like the perfect example of this, where I would say more than anything, it's not about people being mad at your opinions. It's more like glazing. They want to praise you. Mm-hmm. And that is harder.
Yeah.
That's harder to deal with than criticism in person. Because just as RIP Daryl Grove, but that was one of the funniest things where people would be like, Daryl, I love you. And you're so cool. I've been listening to you for, 8 years. And he's like, oh boy. What's all this about? I'm not used to all this. I love that you're here, and I love that you're here in the studio. We have to, we have a hot show today mm-hmm. because not only is guest co-host Matt Doyle here, we taped an interview a couple days ago with the one and only Julie Foudy, one of the 99ers. We talked to her about her new podcast and a lot going on. She has a new podcast with Abby Wambach.
That's a real legend.
That is a
that real, is I mean, that is someone you should be honored to be sitting down with.
She has, I mean, look, her bona fides are a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. She didn't go to a state school,
so she's doing a little bit better than both of us. Yeah. But we all are legends in our own right, right? Yeah. It's like when Heung-min Son was like, "Oh, okay, I'm a legend now." Yeah, after he won the Europa League trophy for Tottenham. So she will be joining us in the second segment, but let's start today with the MLS playoffs. They are now set after MLS Decision Day. We got the one and only Matt Doyle with us today to break it down, which is why it's today's top topic.
This is the top topic.
MLS Decision Day, one of my faves. Mm-hmm. Always something to sort of look forward to. Usually the playoff position is usually the main thing. Who's gonna win the Western Conference? Who's gonna win the Eastern Conference? And who's gonna win the Wooden Spoon? Shout out to DC United. We'll talk about
that. Filling that trophy cabinet, man.
Okay. It's a trophy. You put it in the cabinet somewhere. But let's start with a couple topics. Let's start with Lionel Messi and his season, because he wins the Golden Boot. And we were joking about this last week with Gio Savarese about how it was an international break and he did both. He played for his MLS team and played for his country and maybe got the game moved to Miami so mm-hmm. that he could do both. I've never seen anything like this, but it did feel a little bit like, yeah, I'll just make sure the Nibuanga does not win the MLS Golden Boot just because he said that he wanted to win it for his son. Yeah. it felt a little bit so wildly petty because he did not need to do this, but he did. But he has one of the greatest seasons in MLS history, where we have 48 goal contributions. So I'll put it to you. Is this the greatest individual season that you've seen in MLS?
Yeah. Carlos Vela had 49 goal contributions in 2019, okay, which is still the record. But he played 5-6 more games than Messi did. Messi missed some time this summer with injury and international. He wasn't playing both for Argentina and Miami in every international break. That was just special for this latest one. He wasn't able to get like Bolivian World Cup qualifiers moved to Miami. Messi beat Vela on goals per 90, assists per 90. He also had more non-penalty goals. Vela had eight penalty goals. Messi didn't score from the spot until
this weekend. And it was weird to even see it.
So I think this is, look, Messi's still second best player in the world, maybe still the best. And he's doing to MLS what I think everybody thought he would do to MLS. And it's one of those things where it's like every weekend, you know, with the way my job is, I watch all the games. Mm-hmm. And it's like, which one am I going to watch live? It's like, I'm going to watch Lionel Messi live. Because we might only get this 50 more times, if that, in the rest of our lives. And there's never been anything like this guy.
So how does he have a game like the game against Nashville, where it just looks like completely unstoppable? I mean, the first goal was just one of those, like, who was it that crossed in front of him, like, to try to stop the shot?
It was Yazbek.
And it's like a joke. It's like, you're not even close. Like, it's so strange. Of like, he's whatever, 10, 12 years older than some of the defenders he's on. And they seem lost. And but it weirdly goes from game to game, where the League's Cup final, where he's like, Obed Vargas is like, bro, you're done. You're not doing anything today. And then you know, the next game against Seattle in the regular season is like, it's like a completely different team. So I don't know. Is it Messi having a good game one day and a bad game another, or is it the rest of Inter Miami? Because we know how their defending is, and sometimes it can be wildly erratic.
So I think Miami, the rest of Inter Miami, is the bigger variable. That said, even in that League's Cup final against Seattle, Messi got in on goal twice. And he missed twice. Yeah. One was saved, and the other, well, he just missed it.
Sure.
You know, like the much easier chances to finish than that one he scored the first goal against Nashville. But even that varies game, like half to half. The first half of that Nashville game this past weekend, Miami could have been down 4-0.
Yeah.
It was like they got their ass kicked in. Like it was really, really bad. And the second half was just like 180 degrees. And like Messi went to a different level. And it's, when he's at that level, I'm not going to say Miami's unbeatable, because like they can still, like, he could score three goals and they can still lose because of that defense. But man, they look really, really good. And that was that second, like, Nashville's a really good team, right? US Open Cup champions. They've beaten Miami before. They've beaten the hell out of Philly a couple times this year. Their underlying numbers, Nashville's a really good team, and they had no chance against Miami in that second half. Yeah. It was a little bit terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, as far as also Mascherano, this feels like I think if he didn't have Messi, Suarez, Alba, and Busquets, I would probably say he's not a good coach. I don't know if that's a fair statement, but it's a... how can they? I watch Miami sometimes, and I'm like, how can they keep getting away with this?
Yeah.
Like, just some of the defending is so ridiculous. Sometimes teams can't finish their chances. Switching goalkeepers, all the
That's actually a point in Mascherano's favor, because it was not Mascherano who decided to bring in Ustari and make him the starter on that team.
Okay.
It was the little guy wearing number 10 who was calling the shots. And Mascherano's biggest job has been, managing the egos in that locker room and managing the playing time and getting everyone to try to pull in the same direction, which I'm telling you, having spoken with folks in and around that team, that is not an easy job at all. So for the fact that he had the stature and the courage to bench one of Messi's best friends down the stretch and go with Rocco Rios Novo, who is a much better goalkeeper at this point than Oscar Ustari. You taking a call from Zoran? Yeah.
The TV decided to do an update.
I think that's a point in Mascherano's favor. I also think, like, as bad as the transition defense is, because you watch, anytime Miami brings 6, 7, 8 players up into and they do it a lot, they lose the ball, it is a jailbreak the other direction. That's really bad. But their mid block and low block defense, much better than last year. So I actually think there's a very good chance that Mascherano's becoming a good coach as we're watching.
Okay. We'll see. I mean, they it can only...
Which one do I hit?
In the penis. hit him.
I love how he just hit the random button and it was the best button. The witty hit him in the... There we go. Much better. All right. So, okay, let's move on. I was just going to say, they can only do better in the playoffs this season than they did last season.
Yeah. So, I mean, they played well against Atlanta. They just, like, Brad Guzan was incredible over two games, and then they had that hilarious breakdown. I got to tell you, I'm picking Miami to win MLS Cup.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they haven't won a trophy yet this year, and I cannot bring myself to believe that this team is not going to win a trophy.
Okay, because of like single game elimination, I think they'll get past the first round. I'm worried about them in those single game elimination rounds. I think the defense is going to catch up to them. They have to be almost flawless, and that's, you can't expect that from Miami almost at all. Or Messi has to have great games, and have two, three goals and a couple assists every single game. I don't see it happening, but we'll see how it goes. All right. Let's move on to Philadelphia Union. They won the supporters shield. I think it was a shock and impressive to a lot of people. Obviously, new coach Bradley Carnell, and I mentioned this last week, but the Michele Giannone asking him, after how everything went on in St. Louis, and he was like, "No, I don't want to talk about it." And he just immediately walked away. I'm like, "Bro, this is an opportunity to dunk on your old team. This would be great." Yeah. He took the higher road. Couldn't be me, but. An impressive job from Bradley Carnell. But we saw he did it in St. Louis. He had a fantastic St. Louis team, got to the playoffs, lost in the first round to Sporting Kansas City. Can the Philadelphia Union win MLS Cup and do the double? You think it's possible?
That St. Louis team stunk, right? That St. Louis team got ridiculously hot and ridiculously good luck for the first half of the season. Uh-huh. And by July, it was clear that it was smoke and mirrors, right? It's not smoke and mirrors with this Union team. Carnell's gotten them to buy in every single week playing the energy drink soccer style. It's like full on smash bang murder ball, right? They just want to press everything. They play everything long. They do have some skill out there. They got a couple of good goal scorers, but make no mistake, it's a system team. And the system works really well in the regular season, especially against bad teams like DC United, who you're wearing right now.
That's right. Shout out to Screaming Eagles.
The best teams in MLS see DC United or Atlanta coming in, and they take the foot off the gas a little bit. And sometimes some of them, they drop points. DC or Philly saw those teams coming to town, and they said, "We have a chance to score a touchdown." And they would go out and do it. So they never drop points against the bottom half of the table. But if you look at the record against Vancouver, Seattle, Nashville,
they also
Miami.
Got a touchdown from Vancouver as well.
Yeah, exactly. They're 0-5-1. No wins, 5 losses, 1 draw, minus 13 goal differential against the best teams in the league.
Oh,
that's the unit. Yeah. And I think, look, they're deserving Shield winners, 100%. I just don't think they have the top-end quality to win MLS Cup, for one. And for two, we've got 10 years of data now that says energy drink soccer does not work as well in the postseason as it does in it. Think about all those Red Bull teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Great regular seasons. But then when they came to the playoffs, they didn't have the top-end talent. They were a piece away.
When you say energy drink soccer, what are the 2-3 points of how would that describe energy drink soccer?
So you trade possession for field position.
I think you're going to trade your captain.
Right. You also do that. The idea, the currency in most game models is you want to complete passes into gaps or even in behind, right? That's a counterattacking team, complete in behind. A possession team is complete into the gaps and force the defense to come with you. The currency in energy drink soccer is duels. You want as many changes of possession as possible, because the theory is the team immediately after gaining possession or in the process of trying to regain, that's when they're at their most disorganized. That's when they're most vulnerable. It was Red Bull brought it to the fore 15 years ago in Germany. And then obviously Jesse Marsh brought it to the U.S. 10 years ago with that great 2015 Red Bull team that won the Supporter Shield. And it's been, it was a very if A, then B reaction to the Pep era Barcelona team that dominated the ball. Everyone said, we can't beat them playing the game on their terms. We have to change the conversation. And the conversation was, screw possession, let's just turn it into a game of duels and a bloodbath.
Okay. Yeah. And it's interesting because especially with the record you mentioned, because the last Union game I watched, live was the game against NYCFC. And it was like, I think it was 1-0 or 2-1. I think it was
1-0. Yeah.
And it was, for as an NYCFC fan, I'm watching it like, all right, these are the Supporters Shield winners. This is, maybe we'll see them in the playoffs and stuff like that. How do we compete against them? And it was like fairly even for the most part. And if it wasn't for that missed chance earlier on from Alonso Martinez,
he got in behind. He missed that chance. And that was it. If that's 1-0, it's a vastly different game.
Exactly. But even just how that even comes about, I'm thinking about like change of possession and duels and things like that. Like the Union could be as susceptible to that on a counter, but the... but you can clearly see the aggressiveness that they played with. And they were playing for the Supporters Shield right there. So you saw they had a lot of motivation. But yeah, in that sense of like, even if a team that's mid in the table of like the playoffs was still pretty competitive against the Union, it maybe doesn't fare too well for how they'll do in the playoffs. I know all the Duke fans, send all your comments to Matt Doyle. He does not think you're going to do it, but we shall see. Look, everybody. Tons of disappointment. Even in the game, I always go back to the LAFC Union final where Alexis and I had this big argument. I'm like, I said they should have won the MLS Cup. And he's like, no, they didn't, but they didn't win. I'm like, yeah, I know they didn't win, but they should have won. And this is like this whole like who's on first kind of scenario. But it's they just come up short all the time. And it's like, whether it's Jim Curtin, hopefully kind of turns the tide. I'm worried that the ACL tear to Quinn Sullivan. I think that is a little bit. I think they'll still be fine, but overall, you don't want to see something like that. So, best of luck in the playoffs. Unless you're playing YZFC, I don't want you to win. That's how I feel.
My issue with the Philly roster is they do not have the top end quality to hit the like button right now.
All right, let's move on. Charlotte, they're facing NYCFC in the first round of the playoffs, but. Their star player, their DP, Wilfred Zaha, will not be playing in that game, in the first game, because he gets a red card. Oh, he gets, a second yellow and gets sent off for, I forgot even who it was, but he smacked or fake. I don't know if it was a mush.
It was Bueno. He's a backup demon. For the Union, who we just when you're playing the Union, they're gonna go out and they're gonna rough you up, and they're gonna make it into a game where they're fouling you and they're getting under your skin. Mm-hmm. And Wilfred Zaha is 32 years old,
something like that. Yeah,
grow up, man.
Yeah. It's interesting because Zaha, did you see that post match interview that he was where he was like, people don't like how they think I'm emotional or whatever or reacting, but it shows that I care. And
because definitely
his
it
body
does.
Language is really for the most part pretty negative when he's like a teammate doesn't pass him the ball when he wants to. Like, oh my god, he's like this guy, get him out of the team, Dean. he clearly just shows that in his body language. And after that game, they win, 9 in a row? After that post-match interview, they win 9 in a row. So you're like, oh, man, maybe Zaha tapped into something and got everybody motivated. And then we sort of go back to this, like, this is just... It's not even like a crazy challenge or something, where you're trying to fight for the ball. The guy got under your skin.
And you see it 15 times a game. Guy's shoving behind.
Yeah. But I think they kind of do it because they know it'll bother him. Dean Smith, after the game in his post-match press conference, he was saying that he called it the red mist. Sometimes we get the red mist or whatever. I'm like, what a cute way to say that. But it just feels like it's such a pivotal moment. It's like before the game, you tell everybody, don't get a red card. The playoffs are coming. Literally, do anything you want, but do not get a red because we need you in the next game. Yeah. And he goes on and mushes the guy, kind of pushes him or whatever. It's just such a dumb overreaction. And I saw Sasha Kleshin mention this on MLS Wrap Up that he's favoring NYCFC because of this red card. I was favoring them regardless, but this is I don't know how Charlotte gets past this.
Yeah. I'm with you. I was gonna pick NYCFC to come out of that one anyway. I just think they have more weapons and the way they're playing. I know they didn't finish the season great, but like the way that they're playing, is more compelling to me than what we've seen from Charlotte, even during that 9-game winning streak. Charlotte can win anyway because they have Christian Kalina in goal. And during that 9-game streak, he was just insane.
Yeah.
Like, like saving them a goal a game type stuff. But no, like, their other, like, for Charlotte, it's not just Zaha. Pep Biel is hurt, injured, and he's their best chance creator. So, like, those are two match winners. It's down to Eden Tokolamadi, the forward, and, like, he's good, but he needs service, and they don't really have a guy who can provide service now. So, my guess is that that first game for Charlotte, they're going to just park in their own 18, and they're going to defend for 90 minutes, and they're going to try to get out of there with a 0-0.
Okay. Beautiful soccer. Gonna see a fantastic game. I can't wait. All right. The couple other things before we get to Julie Foudy. San Diego end up winning the Western Conference. And congrats to them. An expansion team doing this, I think, is fantastic. But the game, the Vancouver game, there was a red card given to Laborda.
Yeah.
And this felt a little bit it felt a little bit harsh. I don't know. It was a dog. So if you haven't seen the play, but basically Laborda's going, I forgot who's getting the ball from
Dallas.
FC Dallas player. Yeah. But he's run through the ball. I'm going towards the goal. He's on sort of the right side.
Yeah, he dumped it into the channel, and Sam Sarver won the foot race, and Laborda does take him out. It's 45 yards from goal. It's the Sarver's first touch. It's not directly at goal.
Yeah, it's going away from the goal.
I thought it was more yellow than red, but also, like, if you're a defender, like, there was one other defender back, but he was on the other
side of
Anderson Julio, who's going to beat him for pace. So, like, I could understand the red. It's a bummer, though, because I think in the Western Conference, I think what we've seen from Vancouver all year has been remarkable. They're down to now in the first game of their series against Dallas. This is a preview of what we'll see in the first round. They're now down to their sixth and seventh choice center backs. Because Laborda is actually a right back, and he'd been playing center back for the past couple of weeks because they're two starters, and then the two guys they brought in during the summer window, they're all hurt. So, like, they're now down to their sixth and seventh choice center backs. It's brutal for them. I still think they're going to go through. But I understand why Caps fans were a little bit angry after that.
Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, I did see people being like, the MLS don't want us to win.
Yeah.
Which is always, it's always funny, that narrative. Because I'm just like, I would not associate that with the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Dude,
like,
you're wrong.
I think, really?
Vancouver people get steamed because they have that. Well, first of all, Canadian team in an American league.
Yeah.
So they, like, Montreal has that too, and Toronto has that too. But they're also, you know, that West Coast thing that Sounders, really Northwest thing that Sounders and Timbers fans have. They're like, nobody thinks about us. We're South Alaska.
Yeah, sure.
It's even more pronounced for Vancouver. And then you add on top of it that this is the best season that they've ever had by far. So there's, like, a lot of stuff like that. You got a stew going.
I mean, obviously, you work for Major League Soccer, but the first thing that crosses my mind, do you think, like, the powers that be at Major League Soccer did not want Thomas Muller going to the Whitecaps? Do you think they would have preferred him go to another team?
I doubt it. I've never, like, I've worked at MLS for 15 years. I've never heard anything like that.
Okay.
Do you think everybody was happy that, you know, Miami wanted, or Messi wanted to go to Miami, or Son wanted to go to LA? Like,
those are.
Yeah. Do they wish, probably, you know, that NYCFC signed Kevin De Bruyne? Yeah, I think they probably would have liked that.
Got it.
But I have never seen or heard of anything where it's like, this guy wants to come play in MLS. Well, let's direct him to a big market. I don't think that.
Unless you're Jermaine Defoe. I mean, not Jermaine Defoe. Jermaine Jones. Jermaine Jones was the one.
I think that was less the league office and more the politicking among the owners.
Though. Okay. That makes sense.
Which is like, it's a different type of competition.
Yeah. Jermaine Jones is always just ripe with. It's just like, if you want to hear how he was wronged, he will let you know quickly. All right. Last thing. DC United. I'm wearing the Screaming Eagles shirt. They win the wooden spoon.
That's the highlight of their season. You wearing that shirt.
The Screaming Eagles always, they've shown us a lot of love, but terrible, terrible season. I thought it was going to be LA Galaxy for the whole season that was going to win it. And they found a way to, you know.
Second half of the season, the Galaxy actually had a winning record.
They looked all right. Yeah. But I want to talk about DC United because there seems to be a lot of institutional issues. Mm-hmm. And I don't really... I've followed as much as I could, but I'm not aware of all the specifics. But I know that they have a sporting director that is just like an agent or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they got rid of their like scouting department, which is if you have a soccer team, you're gonna need a scout a little bit. You need people and you need to know where they are. So you need somebody to do that. So what is going on with DC United?
A couple of years ago, they hired the assistant sporting director from Nashville to be their chief soccer officer, replacing Dave Casper, who moved into an advisory role and had been there forever. And this guy, Ali Mackay, he did not do a great job. So came time for a change mid-season. They fired the coach. The guy who they got to help, the consultant to help find the new coach who they hired, a guy by the name of Renny Weiler. He's an Austrian. After working with DC's owners for 2 weeks or 2 months, however long it was, consulting, they were like, this is the smartest and hardest working person we've ever met in soccer. And that's a literal quote from one of the DC owners. And then they hired Erkan Sorgut is his name. He's a Turkish sports lawyer. He's been he represented Mesut Ozil for a while. He writes thrillers using AI, and like I didn't read them, but one of my buddies did, and apparently it's like Taken, except the guy, the protagonist is a soccer agent, and like as he's trying to rescue his daughter, he's also negotiating a move to Manchester United for his star client.
I have a specific set of skills. I can sort out Tam and Graham and get you the best deal.
He made his first signing as chief soccer officer this past week. He signed a 15-year-old from the academy, really high-rated kid, to an MLS, I think it was a Next Pro contract, so like a reserve league contract. And he announced it on LinkedIn. He announced it. So I think that...
Hell yeah,
dog. It's going to be an interesting couple of years.
That's amazing. I mean, look at the connections you can make.
It's all about networking in this biz, man.
That's... I'm sure a lot of DC United fans listen to this. There's obviously clearly cause for concern. And I've seen fans themselves, all the supporters, I've seen them write all the letters. Like they're not going to be renewing their season tickets. They've been supporting the team since 1996 and all this other stuff. So people are upset. They need to change something. I mean, you have Christian Benteke and you're just completely wasting him. Is this his last season? I don't even know.
So they have a contract option. That has not been exercised or declined as of yet that I have seen.
Interesting.
I'm that should be this week. We'll know.
Okay. Yeah. Because I'm sure he's going to be like, please don't exercise. Or at least
it's $5 million, man.
I would be like, give me a reason to stay. I mean, that isn't just about money. So just really, really disappointing season for DC United. And I did the Atlanta United and DC were playing, and that was like the wooden spoon. Like
El Crapico. El Crapico.
The draw kept Atlanta United safe. So they end up firing their coach and the whole thing. So both of those teams who I think both of us, they both were in the playoffs last season.
I think DC just missed.
DC just missed, right? That was towards the end. But relatively decent season and both are completely collapsed. So it's kind of a shock. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to our conversation with Julie Foudy. Again, we spoke to her a couple days ago about her new podcast project with Abby Wambach. We talked a lot about women's national team, a lot of Wilson stuff. So this episode has a nice little combo, little nice mix of everything.
You're a renaissance man. That's really what it is.
That's what we do here. We got a couple jokes in there. So it's great. All right. Let's take a quick break and then we'll get to our conversation with Julie Foudy.
Christian, when people hit us up that want to be on the show, you know what I ask them? Show me your trophy cabinet. You know what I mean? And if it ain't got at least a World Cup, I don't want you on here.
Right.
But that is not a problem. with this guest, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only Julie Foudy, everybody.
The 99er herself. Julie Foudy, what's up?
I fall into the rookie category, right?
Okay,
Not the other ones.
Well, maybe, you know what? I mean, you've been in the media game for a long time as well. So we couldn't call you a rookie there. I mean,
rookie at the media game too.
But this is definitely, you know, we're much more peers in this industry versus anything I've done on the pitch or Alexa.
We couldn't tie your boots on the pitch, but off the pitch, hey, all right, we can talk. We can get with the best of them. You stepped in the podcast game. Welcome to the party, Julie Foudy. Has it been a party?
A new pod, yeah. How's
new
it going
pod,
with that?
A new pod. The Welcome to the Party pod is so much fun. When I was doing a pod with ESPN called Laughter Permitted for years, and then I just recently am no longer with ESPN, and Abby came up to me, Wambach, a former soccer player as well and teammate, and was like, hey, do you want to do a women's sports podcast? and at the time she asked me, I was sitting next to, true story, Billie Jean King, having a conversation with her in this really weirdly quiet moment. You never get quiet moments with the Kinger, I call her. She's a dear friend because everyone wants a piece of Billie Jean all the time. So I just happened to be sitting with her and her wife at an Angel City game pregame in this suite with no one else there with us, talking about podcasting and Billie wanting to get into podcasting. And Abby, you know, the puppy that she is all the time, she just comes like bounding up and is like, you want to do a podcast? and I looked at Billie like, oh my God, this is so crazy. And that's literally the origin story of our Welcome to the Party. So it's me, Abby, Abigail, I call her, or Mary, her real name. Did you know her real name was Mary?
No. What? Yeah. I feel like I've been lied to for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Wait,
can
what?
You say Abby Wambach is a Mary, by the way? Is Mary? She Mary?
Mary oh Wambach God. Doesn't scare me airily. Abigail Wambach, kinda. Abby Wambach? I'm not even jumping.
Mary Wambach. So the Kinger, Billie Jean, myself, and Abby launched this new podcast called Welcome to the Party. And it's all women's sports, the party being women's sports. And it was kind of the idea of like, whether you've been at the party a long time like us, or you're new to the party, everyone's welcome. And it's just been, and it really is a party vibe. We kind of like take the cooligan fun, right? Like,
without our permission? How dare you?
Fun is
ours.
Yeah,
actually, hold on. Let's get our lawyer on the call.
We own fun.
Can our lawyer come in the room, please?
No. And you know what? And what I...
We're actually changing our name to Welcome to the Fiesta. It's about time.
We're going to have some competition in the Spanish market. But compared to, you know, I can also speak for my wife. Huge fan of Abby.
Mary. Just say Mary.
Obviously, it's Mary now. Mary and Glennon's podcast, We Can Do Hard Things.
Yeah.
And that is the, I would imagine, it's Welcome to the Party. The complete opposite of the tone, the energy. I appreciate Abby and Glennon's podcast because there's obviously very important conversations.
Deep conversation.
But you heavy. Can see... You can tell there's just a sort of weight lifted. I'm like, oh, I don't have to talk about my feelings with Julie Foudy. Let's do this.
She actually said, Abby was like, look, those were like 400 and something episodes I did of like really impactful stuff, but I cannot wait to get to the party. So that she did say that it's a lot lighter. So, and she's still doing both. So she gets she gets a little taste of the deep heavy and then she comes to this party.
What else? I mean, you mentioned you did a podcast with ESPN. We don't count those, right?
Yeah.
When you're already getting paid a salary and they tell you, could you also talk on this microphone?
God. Don't even get me started on that, Alexis. Yeah,
you are now. Oh, by the way, we assume you got paid a salary.
I'm not even ESPN sure, actually. So.
They probably paid you to use the ESPN name. But now that you're independent and you're doing a podcast independently, even though, yes, you're doing it with Billie Jean King, which we're going to find out her name is, you know, Terry after this. and Mary Wambach. You're doing it with superstars. You're a superstar. It's a little different, right? You're independent. It feels different. Now you can just text people, hop on.
Totally.
You can do it on your own schedule. Do you work better when you're doing it independently, or do you work better when there's like seven producers who are very badly paid texting you nonstop to hop on a Zoom link?
Our producer who formerly worked at ESPN might be weighing in.
He is dying right now.
Hey, look, nothing against ESPN. They were very good to me for a very large number of years. I worked there for 20 years. Yeah. But to be able to go to the sponsors you want to go to, for example, obviously sponsorship is a huge piece of it with podcasting. And we had no control over that.
I need
a soundboard. This is what I need. You are reinforcing that right now, Alexis.
I'm going to be honest. You with a soundboard would be dangerous because the intro to the, Laughter Permitted was always insane. I can't imagine you with a soundboard.
Wait, give me you must have like a whoopee cushion, right?
No, we have like this.
That's one of those.
Oh, come on.
I mean, it's not 1963, Julie Foudy.
Also,
that's my Halloween outfit.
Our show was almost called Farting Permitted. We don't need a whoopee cushion
sound. I call
it
Welcome to the Farty. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Me and Christian are prepared to fart at all times. I don't know how much my underwear is.
Speak
for
yourself. I mean, you know, I provide a different thing to this program, not necessarily.
He'll tell you that. His wife makes him eat super healthy. And the kid's ready to fart. He's nothing but Brussels sprouts.
Oh, asparagus. No, thanks. Okay, so I think back on track. I think that the independence actually is very liberating because you can also talk about what you want and you can hit on things you want. I mean, we could be like, well, and also it helps to have Billie Jean King and Abby as your two podcast partners because like you basically can text anyone in the world and they're like, okay, we want to come on. I mean, and getting guests is a hustle, as we know, right? So it's been super fun. And it's just fun. Like Abby and I and Kinger laugh so hard all the time. And we really wanted to show as well and honor Billie Jean King in this space. Obviously, she has run the women's sports world for the last four decades, and she's the thread that runs through all of it. But giving her a space on a consistent basis to share her stories and her wisdom and who she is in a different light than people typically see is also really fun for us.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I read Brian Escuri's autobiography maybe last year, I believe.
Yeah, really
and,
good.
I think she spoke about her a little bit, but just hearing how so many of those players in the U.S. Men's National Team talk about Billie Jean King and how she kind of paved the way is. I mean, you can hear just in the emotion in your voice of, you know, if I
how
let you keep going,
loved,
yeah, she is very much appreciated.
Yeah, she was actually, I say, the catalyst that started our equal pay fight with the women's national team. And a lot of people don't know that story, right? Like back in the 90s, she was the one who came in and said, hey, this needs to be better. What are you doing about it, Foudy? And I was like, I don't know. So
I'm 20. You know?
Yeah, I'm like 22. Yeah. I'm just, you know, trying to stay on the team. So she, and then she stayed with us for years and years and years, just advising and as a mentor. And, you know, we never got in my generation to equal pay. We were fighting for more equitable pay, but, you know, the next generations did. They carried that over the finish line, and that was huge. But she was really the start of it all.
And I was going to say, this is where I want to get to. Let's talk about money because it's getting serious right now in women's professional sports, especially women's soccer. You obviously are wearing the Angel City shirt, one of the owners as well. Alyssa Thompson. It's as fans of NWSL, it's difficult to see very good players leave and play anywhere else. And she's doing well at Chelsea. She just drew a red card on another player who pulled her hair, which is also kind of wild. But there was a lot of conversation. Her leaving, I think, triggered a lot of conversation about the NWSL salary cap and should we have it and you know, so that we can keep those great players here. Obviously, it's very difficult for a player like that to leave your team. But what are your thoughts on kind of how it all unfolded and where kind of we are when it comes to money and competing leagues in women's soccer?
Do you see these puffy eyes of mine? This is over, Alyssa, leaving.
Right, right.
I'm still weeping. And I get it. Like, I support her, of course, going, because I do think playing Champions League, playing in a different country, all of it, right? I get the appeal of it. Obviously, a larger salary, more money, all those things. And so I don't, I wish her nothing but the best. But it's so hard for NWSL when she's your star on your team. She's a star in the league. And, you know, right now, I think that's going to be an issue for NWSL is how are we retaining and keeping our biggest names? It's absolutely an issue. And we've talked a lot about the salary cap, you know, over the years. And I think one of the things they're going to have to, and I say this as an owner as well, but we're going to have to reckon with is we're going to continue to lose players to Europe, especially now with, and this is no fault of Emma Hayes at all, but Emma Hayes knows the importance of getting a diversity of tactics and play and different countries and different players, right? And she had, prior to becoming the U.S. Women's National Team coach, thought that more should be playing abroad. And I think she's going to support it in a way that's healthy. If you want to do it, she's going to support a player doing it. Whereas I think coaches in the past, whether it was overt or not, were a little more vocal about staying closer to home. And mind you, as you get into these gap years when you have no World Cups or Olympics, obviously the pull from across the pond is much stronger because you don't have to keep going back and forth as much. But I think they're going to have to, we're going to have to as a league address the salary cap. And I mean, I look back to MLS and what they're doing and what they've done with designated players. And maybe that's a solution to it rather than abolishing the cap altogether, because I do think the cap obviously has brought some stability. It's brought parity amongst the teams. One thing that, as good as the WSL is, the Women's Super League over in England, they don't have that same parity, which is something that all players talk about here, right? That, you know, so many teams are in the chase still. So, but could you create... Can you hit some levers that say, okay, let's maybe keep the cap intact? And we know it's raising to what, over 5 million in the next 5 years. I don't think that's enough, honestly. But could you then bring in designated players? And maybe it's not just three, it's five, it's seven, where they come in at a fixed rate on the cap. It doesn't count against the cap, and you can pay them what you want, as we've seen with MLS. And it's not just for foreign players or international players. It's for domestic as well. Trinity Rodman, Sophia Wilson, both becoming free agents in 2026 could be a big problem. And I don't know if that's going to be able to be enacted in time, as you know, these teams in Europe who have no restraints on their spending are coming after them. And that's a problem. Absolutely.
Mm. What do you stand to gain something? And when I say you, I mean the league, right? Women's soccer in the U.S., NWSL in particular. Do you stand to gain something from building these superstars that go and have sabbaticals in Europe and eventually do come home, right? There's a lot of back and forth, which I think is a big positive, because you learn something different in Europe than you'll learn here and vice versa, right? European players coming to play here. Do you gain something from being able to maybe put a high value marker on some of these players? It's like, all right, you're going to go play in Europe for the next 3, 4, 5 years. Go enjoy another country. You deserve it. You're going to go get paid a lot more money than maybe we can give you right at this moment because of the cap, but we're going to get X amount of dollars for that contract that we wouldn't have been able to do maybe 10 years ago, not even 10 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe you'll get $1 million. Maybe you'll get $3 million. Maybe you'll get $5 million for some of these players. Trinity Rodman should be valued at a very high number, right, if she were to go to Europe. Do you think you stand to gain something from
you
that?
You do, but in the end, players are what I think ultimately are the drivers of success in a league, right? They're the drivers of revenue. They're the drivers of attendance. They're the drivers of viewership. And so if you are losing so many stars to Europe, and they're all over there, and we can go through the list that have gone over there, right? Obviously, Horan, or Heaps, as we now know her, has been there for a while. Crystal Dunn is back over there. you know, you go down the list of the ones at Chelsea, Katerina Macario, who never really came to the NWSL in the first place. She went straight to Europe. So Naomi Girma, we lost. But if you keep losing them, at what stage does this league, this NWSL, retain some stars? And yes, we're going to build new stars for sure. But it is an issue when you look across the board and go, okay, who do we have from the U.S. side in particular that we could keep, right? Mallory Swanson, of course, out with pregnancy. Sophia Wilson out with pregnancy. Trinity Rodman's been out most of this year with injury. And so I do think that we have to provide more incentive, and we are going to lose some. There's no question, Alexis. I think I would have gone and played in Europe, right, if I had that opportunity to do that, even regardless of the money. I actually did. I went to Sweden and there was no money in it just because I wanted to explore Europe, right? So that's going to happen for sure. But I just think we have to provide more incentive for them to stay, because players are what drive success. There's no question about it. And a lot of them want to stay, I'm sure, but it's hard to, you know, say no to an extra comma in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you look at that you know, that salary.
And it does, especially after the Olympics, it does feel like they're, especially with Alyssa Thompson, Trinity Rodman, even what they do on the pitch has been fantastic. And Alyssa Thompson's growth in just this last year has been like, wow. So she's really growing into like a more of a leadership role on the team before she left. And then the TikToks. The dancing.
She got him Alyssa to do it right
and
away,
Giselle,
didn't she?
There, I mean, she was just like, I'm a champion. I'm a gold medalist. Let me go do my TikTok thing. And taking over TikTok by storm. And then Trinity Rodman. And then the power couple of Ben Shelton. I'm like, they're doing everything right. They can't leave now. We can't lose them now.
I know. I thought with, you know, her younger sister at the club, right? She's only 20 years old. She just signed another contract. And, you know, all those things working in what we thought the NWSL's favor.
Some of those meetings, I'm sure the meetings were like, you're going to leave your sister. You're going to leave your sister behind.
You're really going to do
this? I wouldn't do that. I care about my family, but you do you, you know?
How much to leave your family? Okay. I mean, everybody has a price.
I don't want my Thanksgiving to be weird, but you, I guess you don't care about that, so go ahead.
No judgment. Enjoy no judgment.
No, space. No. It's all business.
Hey, I don't judge. I'm just saying. I think my other question, I know we spoke about this a while ago, but the realm has changed, right? The world that NWSL plays in is so different. USL has a top flight women's league, right? Northern Super League is starting up. There's seemingly more and more competition. We've talked about this before as well. In Latin America, Mexico in particular, seems to be taking the women's game so much more seriously. Yeah. And they really seem, especially some of the big teams, really seem to be seeing value in investing in the women's side. Do you think this is good for the women's game? Or do you kind of look at maybe the WNBA and go, man, if you could really just focus all of your efforts on one league and its superstars, you can really make leaps and bounds as you grow? Or do you think the world of soccer needs all of that other competition?
It's a great question. I actually think it's healthy. I think it's healthy having all of this. I think the USL and having that competition drives NWSL to be more innovative. It drives them to be more creative in terms of how they're building out their growth strategy. It drives them to raise their salaries, right? And salary cap, hopefully, eventually. And I think a deeper pool of players and more players able to play at the professional level and get paid to do it is a really good thing. I know Emma Hayes would be like, heck yes, this is great. I get all these players that I can then, you know, call upon, and a deeper pool, as she always says, means you can make a deeper run with the United States women's national team. So I do think they help each other. And that it's good for the women's game. And as we know, right, like investment in the women's game globally, to your point, Alexis, whether it's in Mexico, in Europe, we're seeing that it's happening everywhere. And the numbers coming back they're just going to keep rising. And so that's where I think as a league in this country, we have to stay with that pace.
Yeah. Speaking of the national team, I mean, you know, Emma Hayes, I think, you know, definitely revitalized his team and brought something very exciting. I'm curious. This is something interesting to me. And I know your history with the national team, obviously, and equal pay fight. You know, it's almost impossible to divide the sport you're playing with the politics around it with, you know, about, you know, equity and equality. I'm curious about what being a national team player when the country is just going through a lot, right? Whether it's ICE, whether it's just people disliking the administration and all this stuff. When you put on the badge and you're wearing the shirt and you're sort of dealing with like that is not it has nothing to do with the sport, but it's clearly like you're facing someone an opponent that's like probably is a little bit more into this game because mm-hmm. oh they don't like mm-hmm. the U.S. for this particular reason and that's been you know throughout you know the Olympics World Cups it's something that comes up with either particular players or on the you know or people are upset at the administration but when you're sort of dealing with that is it something to ignore is it something to discuss with your teammates how does that sort of work when you're representing the national team.
Yeah, well, it wasn't nearly as divisive as it is now when I was playing. So there weren't, although I can remember waking up every morning having arguments about guns and NRA, you know, and whether that was a good thing or not with teammates back in the day. But I mean, this the level we're at obviously now is a different level. And I think I would be making an assumption for this current team because I'm not in the locker room. I'm not at their meals when, you know, a lot of these discussions are happening. But it's probably something that it's like regardless of where you fall on the spectrum with what's happening in this in the United States, you still love your country. Right. You still, when you put on the red, white, and blue, you're going to fight for your country and you're going to play for your country. And it's an honor that is like nothing else to be able to say I'm playing for the United of America. And so I think they do it with the same amount of pride and who knows what those conversations are about in the locker rooms. And I'm guessing they happen for sure because we're humans and we want the best for this country. But you always, always know when you throw it on the jersey, like you've got to represent it with the utmost respect and honor for your country.
Okay.
Yeah. And you won Olympic gold. You know, and we've talked about this. We've talked about the Olympics and just sort of how awestruck you get when you're in those moments. A lot of young players are starting to come through, and it felt like maybe we've been with, you know, the 99ers for so long. It felt like, man, you guys had like a 20-year playing career in international.
Because it just felt like
yeah.
What?
We just felt like we Isn't constantly
Saudi
heard
like
your names.
50 years old by now?
Yeah. Like they won't leave the pitch. But it feels like every time the women's team suits up, there's three or four new players. Yeah. Do they know enough to reach out to you and maybe get a little bit of guidance, maybe get some wise words of wisdom from you? Or do you ever get that opportunity to share that? And what do you say to someone? How do you explain to someone like, yo, it's crazy, bro. There's like people everywhere.
Well, I do love that Emma has been so bullish on bringing in younger players and just broadening the pool and deepening the pool. I mean, that's been a big, big objective of her and her staff. Which I think is so needed and was so needed. And Emma is like so good at coming in with an outsider's view when she came over from Chelsea in England and saying, okay, and this is where she's brilliant and she's brilliant in a lot of different ways. So, but this one where she comes in and she looks at the federation, she looks at the national teams, and she looks at the whole system of national teams, from youth national teams to the senior national team to the under 23s, kind of in the middle there, and immediately puts her finger right on the issues. It's amazing. She'd be like, why do we have so many gaps with the under 23s? Why aren't we doing more training? Why is our pool not stronger? Why
you hear that, Marisa Pochettino? Okay.
She came in and so quickly identified the issues and the gaps and was like, here is where we're going to put our focus. And bringing in those younger kids, there was a point, mind you, where we were like, do we have the younger kids coming through? Are we developing the kids in the right way? Because we're seeing Spain winning everything, Japan winning everything, North Korea winning everything. And our youth national teams on the women's side were not doing well. And what Emma has done is reinforced the fact that, yeah, our pipeline, yes, as messy and messed up as it can be and is, it's still producing players because we just have the volume in this country. We have millions of girls playing. So, do I get a chance to give them some feedback? I don't ever walk up to young kids and be like, hey, can I tell you about my days in the 99?
Do you know who I am?
18th century? We did have electricity and toilets. There was running water. Screens were not
viable. Pterodactyls were flying overhead.
But the nice thing about broadcasting and doing all the U.S. Women's National Team games is that you keep a foot in the door in terms of just relationships with the players, with the team. You're constantly talking to the players and Emma and that group. And so you stay connected in that ways. And so, yes, there's always opportunities where a player will ask something about, you know, the World Cup we won when they weren't even born. That's really a great feeling. But yeah, it's fun that I stay connected to the players that way.
I 2 years ago, I played in TST and I was doing a bunch of interviews as well while I was there. And obviously the U.S. women won both years, but I got to talk to Michelle Akers, and she's done the show before, but it was the first time in person. It was the first time I saw her kind of just walking around.
Right.
And just getting stopped for photos. And I mean, it's even for me, I remember being a kid watching. I remember when you guys won, you guys were on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. I remember that because I used to love, that's how I got into comedy. I mean, Jay Leno's not my, you know, comedic hero, but Jay Leno was someone who I used to watch a lot of late night shows. And I remember vividly that moment because a lot of my memories through sports and everything were seeing guests on late night shows, and it was great to see it in person because, you know, so when I was interviewing Akers, I was, part of me, in even thinking about the questions I was going to ask, I'm like, part of me is like, is she tired of talking about 99? Is she tired? I mean, I think about that with you as well. Like, I understand, I love hearing it. Are you guys tired of talking about it? Because
never tired.
Good.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I still talk about it. I wasn't even there, bro. I was just watching.
No,
there'll come a day when I can't even remember it. So no, I don't get. Wait, 1999? What happened?
No, it was great to witness because it's something, you know. Even with everything, like the fight that you guys put up for equal pay and all the history, it's like part of it's like, you know, history can repeat itself if people kind of forget what you guys did. But there must be some pleasure in maybe even a little bit of envy of like, man, I wish I was getting paid that when I was playing. But there must be some joy in being like, we kind of built what all these new players, like Alyssa Thompson being able to get that amount of money kind of probably doesn't happen without all your guys' efforts.
I think we played a part in the history and role of developing the game for this country. And so we take a lot of pride in that. And then when you see these big monumental things happen, like when they did get equal pay, I mean, the 99ers thread was just, I mean, the swearing in terms of F yes, you know, like this is what we were fighting for so long. And it's so great to see that next group was able to keep up the fight and then take it over the line, which is the hardest thing. So I think it's just immense pride is what you feel mostly. So, and that, you know, when we went, like when we won the Olympics in 2024, this last one, when we had not done well in the prior World Cup, had not done well in the Olympics before that, the Tokyo Games, and to see the U.S. back on top, it's like, yes, this is where we belong. So I think it's all kind of these full circle moments. They're almost like this maternal, like, ah, your baby's doing okay.
Yeah. The
Have you ever thought about retro equal pay?
Oh, yeah. Believe me, we've asked about that. Do you go back to the 18th century on that, too?
How far are we going back in this lawsuit, by the way?
Last thing before I let you go, because I I was watching the episode of Welcome to the Party with Rebecca Lowe, and I really enjoyed this because you were talking about, you know, as sport parents and sport moms and how to deal with your kids. So I have a 2-year-old who's kicking the ball already. And
oh, gosh,
so
good luck.
We'll see.
Not doing bicycle kicks yet, Christian? Yet. You're behind.
Not yet. There's like, yeah.
So he's really failing.
You know, when you watch, you're scrolling, you watch those like TikTok parents and they're like doing drills with their 1.5-year-old. And I'm like, oh my God, do I have a failure? Have I failed my child already?
When my kids were 5, people were like, they're not in soccer yet. What is wrong with you as a parent?
especially you? As you, Julia.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I
haven't started.
How's
your kid playing in the U4s? And you're like, the U4s?
I love the episode because there was the do's and don'ts of sport parents and
yeah, well, because Rebecca Lowe has a 9-year-old Teddy who's just getting into it, and she is so funny on Instagram. She's constantly like, I don't know, do I have to bring all these things to a game? What am I supposed to be doing here?
I love it.
People roll up in wagons.
She's there on the sidelines with like her big sun hat. Like looking like just not like a standard American sport parent or whatever.
American sports parenting is very different, I'm sure, than English.
Oh yeah,
sports
she's like, you know, in England they're like, yeah, whatever, do your thing. She's like, here? Yeah. Oh my God. So we told her in that episode, we said, okay. She's like, I miss a lot of games on the weekends, of course, because of my job. She does English Premier League stuff for NBC, of course. And she goes, so I try and go to every practice. And Abby was like, you can't go to every practice. That's not allowed. She goes, I know, but I miss the weekends. She's like, no, one practice a week. That is it, Rebecca. So last week, don't tell Mary Abigail Wambach this. She texts me and she sends me a picture of her sitting at practice. She's like, don't tell Abby.
And it's interesting, I can understand, and I understood Abby's response because on her podcast she was talking about her parents and how bad she would feel sometimes at practices by either criticism or anything. So there's, you can, especially you two in particular that have such a history with the game and such a like foundational importance to the American game, you guys didn't get here without some trauma. And
Me, I got a lifetime of scars. And I've got a lifetime of scars from watching my kids play. Now I'm like, God, I told my younger kids, you're going to have to quit sports. We're done with this. I can't do this anymore.
Is it harder to watch them play or like playing in a World Cup final?
Harder to watch them play. My kids at Oregon now playing soccer, University of Oregon, and they're it's a new coach, new year, and they're not winning a ton of games, and so it's just like every game you're like, oh god.
It must be hard to not give notes. You're like, you know what I would have done? And by the way, I won a couple trophies. I would.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see this.
Can we talk
medal.
About the formation we're working on now?
Do your kids, are they open to hearing any advice or criticism or coaching at all from you? Or are they just tired of it?
My daughter, who is the soccer player, the freshman at Oregon, when she was like a freshman in high school, was like, no more. Zip it. We were like, okay. So we stopped for like 4 years. And then by her senior year, when she was, you know, going off to college, she's like, okay, now I'm ready for it again. You know, okay. My son is a football and American football and basketball player. And so of which I really can't give him much advice. And when I do, he just kind of looks at me and laughs. I'm like, okay, I know these things though, you know? He's like, yeah, mom.
I would love to see Mama Fowdy on the sideline of an American football game going, these are all red cards. You're all so out of many. The game. Stop hitting my son. Let's start there. My last question for you is, it blows my mind that women's boots were kind of just thought of in recent history, that y'all had to play with men's boots for forever.
Men's everything, Alexis. Right. Sleeves down to my wrists.
That's my next question. What is, because I'm also sick and tired of the women's jersey with the deep V and the cut inside. It's like, bro, maybe my wife don't want to wear that.
Honest,
maybe she just wants to wear a regular
gifted,
jersey.
From the last World Cup, last World Cup, I got gifted a U.S. Women's National Team jersey, the women's cut. fit really nice on me.
Did
I
got
it. Yo, he snatched in it.
You're svelte then.
I'm
like, yeah, dude,
he's got a girlish figure and it works. Do not do well. And sometimes
are you kidding me? I need a sundress.
A WNT sundress for Alexis.
I need a sundress. I need it to go out for
me. Angel City keeps giving me these small women's jerseys and I'm like, I literally have to be like, okay.
My question is, what needs to change next? What needs to be female specific in the women's game? I can't believe shoes we just thought of, but what's next?
This is a great question. This is another thing that Emma immediately was like, hey, this is another gap that we need to fix. And she didn't just start this with the U.S. Women's National Team, but she's done it also at Chelsea as well, is research on women's issues, right? Menstruation and how that's affecting ACLs, research on why women have so many ACL injuries, research on, you know, the load they should be carrying based on the hormonal differences that happen during menstruation, things like that, that often in research, as we know, that has happened for a very long time, decades, it's done with a men's body, with men's data, and isn't relatable to a woman's body. And so we're finally getting to a point where people are talking about, well, what does that mean for a female athlete? And so looking at it from a women's lens and all different levels and areas beyond science as well is going to be something I hope. And of course, we've done it with merch, sometimes too far, but we can now do it with science and data that actually impacts women in a really healthy way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was a scientist smoking a cigarette going, we studied 100 men and none of them have issues while menstruating. Yeah, so exactly. Get out there, ladies.
The guy who led that study, RFK Jr. He's on it. Yeah. He's going to figure it all out.
Yeah. Menstruation.
Don't take
Tylenol.
Everyone, no Tylenol. Okay.
Yeah.
Julie Foudy, always an honor. Thank you so much for joining us, for permitting us to laugh with you for a couple minutes. And everybody go check out Welcome to the Party, the new podcast with Abby Wambach, Julie Foudy, and Billie Jean King.
And what's the social media? Let them know. Where can they see the clips?
What's that? You can see.
Where's the social media for
the
podcast?
Welcome to the Party Show on Insta, TikTok, YouTube. Welcome to the Party Show. It's a lot of fun. So you guys are a lot of fun. Congrats on all you're doing. Love you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for covering the game in such a great way.
Thank you, Julie. Yeah, it never gets any less surreal to be able to talk to people like you and obviously other legends of the women's national team. This is just a really absolute treat for us. So thank you so much for doing it.
Thanks, guys.
To Julie Foudy, she's one of the homies now. I'm sure you get to connect with legends from time to time of the game, whether it's men or women's or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there is have you met any 99ers?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Which you can.
So I met Julie like 15 years ago when I first started the job. I've met most of them, or like been at events where you kind of rub shoulders
a little bit. And it doesn't get, especially with 99ers, it doesn't get any less. You're always like somewhat nervous. You're always, and they're all of them are incredibly down to earth, really cool, like Brian Scurry and everybody. Like they're all so nice and warm and thoughtful. And it's just, there's just something to their aura that I'm just like, do I bow? Like, I don't know. What's the protocol when you meet a 99er? And Julie Foudy is just one of those people.
So you bow then?
I bow. You obviously bow.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah.
To the royalty. We had a no kings protest. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a no queens protest.
There you go.
We got plenty of queens out here. I'm happy to bow when necessary. All right. Before we wrap up the show, we got a couple things in European football to talk about. And this is the thing. Matt Doyle does not talk about European anything. He doesn't even, he doesn't want to.
You can rope me into Barcelona.
Okay. you drinking tea, slaps it out of your hand. I don't want to get that out of here. But just for the sake of, it's obviously in the news. Ange Postecoglou, manager for Nottingham Forest, sacked after four games. And the interesting thing here with him is that he's friends with the owner, Marinakis, who is basically, you know, basically comes off as this like mafia guy that runs a team. And everybody thought like, oh, he got rid of Nuno Espirito Santo just to like, because, you know, they were butting heads.
Bringing his buddy.
Y'all ain't friends like that, apparently. Not more than four games worth.
19 minutes after the final whistle.
This is why it's funny, because I don't think he got a chance to speak to his team in the dressing room. And I don't think he had an opportunity to do any post-match interviews at all. And they put the European announced journalists, they put the players under a lot of pressure, because I forgot who it was that they were talking to. But asking him like, oh, when did you hear the news? Who told you? What was it? And he's just like, bro, I can't just be like, yeah, the sporting director told me. And yeah, this sucks. And I'm emotional. Like, it can't go. He's just like trying to get through the day they just lost. I believe at home, I think. Were they at home? Yeah, they were home. The theater, this is the thing. And we could talk about in the context of American soccer. No manager, in MLS, gets fired after four games. I mean, I it's just not a thing, right? Yeah. So whether you think that is an ingredient of like pro rel, and that would bring that kind of pressure, and sometimes people sort of want that. But I don't know if it's like, and now they're talking about bringing in Sean Dyche, which was my team, Everton. And just the most unattractive, the ugliest football you're going to see. But you might get...
But that's the same as Nuno, right? Nuno Espirito Santo is not great. So to go from that to Angie Ball, which is very different, right? And it did not suit the play. I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert on that roster.
No, but it just so clearly did not work. Yeah. And especially with how good Nottingham Forest were last season. And it's like, to see this, it's like, all right, let's just pull the rope right now, because this ain't working at all. And I don't know if it's like sort of that balance of like, you want an attractive product on the field, or you just want to like kind of win some games. And depending on the season, like for me as an Everton fan, I've seen them go through so many unattractive seasons, but they've been necessary to stay up and just stay in the Premier League. So it's just like, after a while, like last season didn't have the panic and fear of getting relegated, which was like, there was a little bit of like, oh, I'm used to this adrenaline rush towards the end of the season, and you just took it away from me. Now I don't have it. But if you're going to take away the fear, then give me the attraction of like watching.
Play with courage.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is so I can deal with the ugly football if we're in a situation where like there's no ambition to really get up further up the table outside of just staying up. But this is a I just think it's sort of comical for an owner to have a manager that is objectively successful, all working out, and they just could not get past. I think he was bitter at the end of last season because they were arguing on the field after missing out on Champions League. Yeah. And I guess holds it against the manager. But like, put your pride aside. Like, let it go so that you have like some success on the pitch. It just seems like Marinakis is more at fault here.
Yeah. I mean, you know a lot of billionaires who put their pride aside and let it go?
Yes.
You ever seen the show Succession?
Why can't we just have a good ethical billionaire? It's like, it's an oxymoron. It doesn't really work.
To me, it definitely seems like an ownership thing. And I don't know whether to give him, I think you could do both. You could fault him for the way he behaved at the end of last year. You could fault him for going from Nuno and his game model directly to a polar opposite game model. But then, like, making the decision after four games, it's like, this isn't working and it's not going to work. We don't have the right players for it and we just have to stay up. You turn to Sean Dyche and it's like, you're kind of going back to the Nuno. Right, I have a clear-eyed assessment of what we need to make this season not successful, but at least not a disaster that reorgs entirely everything that we can accomplish in the
let's just get out of the way right now. This has been this is not shocking to anyone. Sean Dyche is not getting you to Champions League.
Correct.
It's not happening.
He's not going to get you to 10th. He's going to get you to 16th, which is the goal.
Which is the goal. And again, you were fine before if you could have just put your pride aside and just...
Again, Christian is not a billionaire. Not a billionaire.
I was at the goddamn Zoran game. I'm very much not a billionaire. We were shitting on billionaires for 6 hours, bro. That's it. If I would... But see... If I was a billionaire,
you'd be one of the good ones.
I'd do it different.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay. Nobody look into how I got that $1 billion. I don't know. How do you get $1 billion without doing something?
A lot of podcasts.
So many podcasts. So many. It's just me and Hassan Piker doing all day, 12 to 18 hour streams, bro. Dude. Yeah. Yeah. So this is, look, whatever happened in Nottingham Forest, it's not going to be more successful than it was under Nuno. But best of luck to you. It's going to be interesting to see Everton's former manager, see how they do out there. But I feel like Nottingham Forest were like a fun team to watch last season. And why regress from that when it wasn't even necessary is very shocking to me. All right. Let's wrap up there, everybody. Matt Doyle, yeah, you're the absolute best, dude. You're a natural.
I know.
You're a natural. You're welcome. Next time, we got to get you on the show when Alexis is here as well. Because so you can talk about whiskey or whatever it is.
Pizza. We still have that rivalry.
Y'all have. Because I'm not a whiskey guy. And, you know, I'm more of a cider.
I could like some cider. You know, I was in Asturias this summer, and their whole culture there is cider.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay, highly recommend the north of Spain.
All right, I got to do that. Yeah, I think I saw...
With you and your billionaire friends, you know, buy a little villa.
My good billionaire friends, right? The good ones, all right? They voted for AOC. Okay? But yeah, I think there was a Derby Days that Ellie Menjem did in
Oviedo.
And I think and cider was like a big thing, and I didn't see that.
So they pour it weird because they don't carbonate it, so they pour it like this, so that it hits the side of the glass, and then you have to like drink it real quick.
Okay, that's
it's a whole thing. I've never been carbonate that.
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah. I've never been to Spain, so I really got to do that. All right, Matt, is there anything you want to let people know about? Where they can follow you.
Yeah, everything is still on MLSsoccer.com, right in the column there. And then I have a newsletter as well, tacticsfreezonesubstack.com. Little extra stuff.
Yeah, and it's great. I subscribe to it as well. So shout out to Matt Doyle. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure that you follow us and subscribe and do all those things. Hit the like button. Follow us on all socials, at Soccer Cooligans. On Blue Sky, especially, at SoccerCooligans.com. Blue Sky is really... seeming to be the only usable social media platform right now. Not to say that it's perfect.
Yeah, I don't want to... Let's not jinx anything.
Yeah, right? Yeah. One of them good billionaires can buy it and ruin it. So, but I am very much enjoying it. So get on there if you have not yet. Anything else before we go? We'll be back on Thursday with a brand new episode. Do we have a guest that day or no? We don't have anyone scheduled.
I might crash it. I'll just show up.
Sure. I mean, you know, we put out the asses around. We'll see what if he shows up. So open invitation. So thank you everybody for tuning in. We'll see you on Thursday with a brand new episode. So take care, everybody. Peace. Say bye, Matt Doyle.